Two.
Josh.
Five.
Stop.
Blast
Hello,
off.
Everybody, and welcome to Plat Chat episode 38. You may realize or recognize that there is a lack of energy in the intro of this episode. It's because my arm is currently falling off. I'm going to start to farm some pity from all of you.
I thought for some reason you're going to be like, I'm tired of the ants. I just give it up.
Well,
I'm
tired of the ants, but I also got bit by a mosquito 2 days ago, and now my entire forearm is swollen.
Well, you also
see the red.
Wow, yeah, actually, it's super red.
Oh, yeah, wow.
The entire thing is swollen. My body is having an allergic reaction to some of them. So.
What if it's like carried a virus?
You should take a Benadryl.
Dude, I don't know. I've been taking antihistamines, some anti-inflammatory stuff. I've been slapping Tiger Balm on it. Just got to wait it out, I guess. And if I lose my arm, I lose my arm.
I don't want to make this a Forex episode, but I'm Googling right now. What viruses can mosquitoes...
There was a new one that...
I don't think
there's a new one in the... No, there's a new one in the Northeast that has like a 40% chance to kill you. And then like the other option is like you just take forever to get back to normal. So maybe that's Bren.
Yeah, maybe he was stung by a mosquito when he
was young. I don't think the mosquitoes
time to get back to normal.
I don't think the mosquitoes carry malaria here.
No, it's female and Nepalese mosquitoes that carry it. I think.
Dude,
something
Josh
like
knows
that.
So much stuff, dude.
You learn about it when you're a kid in school. I don't think.
Anyway,
how do you remember that? You learn about it when you fail out of med school.
No.
Let's talk about a recap.
Actually,
let's recap the matches.
Wait, before we talk about the recap, then, I have some knowledge for you because I was talking to my dad earlier today and I mentioned the fact that you were having difficulty with ants. Mm-hmm. And so he was recommending me this stuff and I was like, I don't even live with them, Dad. And he was like, yeah, it's a powder. You just add it to some water. And then I looked up what he was recommending and it's been banned globally since 2008 because it was killing birds. Because it was like just getting into the ecosystem.
Buying it on the black market?
Bro, I have no idea. But apparently he like that's his go-to stuff, and I don't know where he's getting it from, but he swears by it. And I think he's just probably poisoning all the birds around me. I told my sister to look into it and stop him from using it.
Hold on. Before we get into it, Bren, there were 8 matches this week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got to add on to the ant story by saying
Do
you remember on Foreheads when I said, I think, was it Foreheads or Platchett where I said that Tayson, they might be a chatbot trying to gain Overwatch League clout?
I think you actually mentioned this on numerous occasions.
This was my like crackpot conspiracy theory that was meant to be a joke that got out of hand. And now people are like atting Tayson saying Bren from the Overwatch League thinks you're a bot. Which is very rude. But Tay reached out to me. He was listening to the cast and I was talking about my ant problem on the cast and he messaged me 3 essays on how to kill ants because he has this issue on a regular basis in South California and he gave me so many solutions and he was very, very lovely about it. So thank you, Tay Zonde. I know you watch Plat Chat all the time.
Like at that, you accuse him of being a chat bot and then he helps you out.
He was really good on the desk, wasn't he? He was like he followed the game.
He was a big guy.
It was stuff. Yeah. Somebody else who knows this stuff is definitely Brennan Hook.
So what are you gonna do, Matt? Tell me.
Always staying up watching the Asian games.
Uh huh.
We're gonna go through the games and see how many you can tell me who won what in the map score.
I gotta tell you the map score.
Hey, give me Shanghai London.
3-0 Shanghai.
All right. Yeah. New York Seoul.
3-0 New York.
Okay. Paris Boston.
I was a 5 mapper and Paris took it.
Okay. Florida Dallas.
Oh, fuck.
Why are you doing this?
Was it 3-1 to Florida?
4-4.
Okay.
He's a god. He's actually a god.
Atlanta Gladiators.
I know that he watched this because he watched this with me, but we were too busy talking about ants.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Gladiators
just consumed
won.
His life.
I think it was 3-1 Gladiators.
Oh my god, you're on fire. Kurt must have it up on the TV.
Yo, turn up.
Kurt! Philly Houston.
How much are you getting paid, Kurt? No.
Philly Houston was 3-0 to Philly.
Toronto Vancouver.
I casted that one and I can't even remember. Was it? Was it 3-0? Was it 3-0 Toronto? Did they 3-0 them?
Yep.
Yeah, they did.
And the last time, I mean, come on, it's Washington. They always get shit on. You should know this. Washington Valiant.
Yeah, that was Valiant 3-0.
Wow. Oh,
he's amazing. He that actually got them all so, right.
So maybe he's just been lying all the time where he's like, oh, didn't watch this game, whatever. He's trying to be cool, but he actually has seen the games.
Why did you target him like this, Matt?
Because usually whenever he intros it at the beginning, he says, I didn't watch this, and then he goes and gets food.
Yeah.
I wanted to see if he actually does watch them or not, but he does.
I'm playing psychological warfare against all my haters. The people who keep calling for me to be fired, I'm giving them ammunition for free, and I still don't get fired. So it cracks their mental, you know?
What have you done so far that people are asking for you to be fired?
Some people just don't like me, Matt, and I can understand
why. Is it just
because
they want Spice Adams with Josh?
They want Spice Adams for one, but I can imagine I'm a bit of a grating personality if you didn't like my style of, I don't know.
What a horrible word that is.
What style of just you?
Just me, yeah. If you just didn't like
me.
If
you don't like my style of being.
If you don't like my style of a human.
Did you guys, we didn't write this in the rundown, but yeah. We really should have brought up the post where the guy summarized all of us on Plat Chat. On the...
What was that?
Oh, wait, it was a Reddit post. It was like Plat Chat summaries.
No, somebody did that?
Yeah.
I don't see it.
We don't search fucking Reddit parsing for good comments all day, Johnny. We have shit to do.
It was like top of Reddit. I'm going to link it to you, Kurt. I'm going to link it to you.
Kurt's finding it, I think.
I got other shit to do. I'm trying to be a mythic raider. I don't have time for fucking Overwatch.
I've noticed, Matt, that you've tweeted more about World of Warcraft than you have Overwatch over the past week.
What do you mean?
Didn't you congratulate the newest method pickup?
Yeah, have you seen the games we had this week? I'm surprised we're even doing an episode.
Did you watch the games, Matt?
You think I want to promote fucking Toronto, Vancouver?
What is this? Have you not seen this?
No, no, Brent, can we have you read this through? So someone of our fans summarized all of our personalities within like a paragraph. Thanks. And like summarized our personality, our behavior, how we are on the Plat Chat. And they did a pretty good job, actually. Like, it's pretty accurate and pretty funny. So I found this really entertaining. And they got so many upvotes and people really appreciate it. So I thought we had to bring this up.
Mr. X, NYXL and Shock Apologist.
It's true.
Dude, I actually can't even, I have to get up
Shut
close.
Shut up, Matt. Shut up, Matt. Let Bren do the talking. He's
He can't read it.
Yeah, that's true. He's blind.
Give me a second. I'm getting up close.
Where's he going? He's getting in front of the TV in order to read it on the TV.
Yeah, let him.
Good.
Oh, come on.
That's
amazing. Mr. X, New York Excel and Shock Apologist. Does that say nay nay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I say nay, it's I say nay nay.
Nay nay got benched by Brenner's host. Mike is always too loud. Starts the trend of banning hit scam for the week. Got benched by. I can't read. Hello?
I've been benched more times than Sideshow.
It's disappeared from the screen.
Yeah, I would rather say what the fuck is up as the intro for Head to Head than get ad revenue. Did you guys see that one?
Oh, wait, yeah. You said what the fuck is up as the intro?
The video, Josh is counting me down. He's like 3, 2, 1. Then as soon as one goes, I was like, the fuck's up? And he's like, well, we can't get ad revenue off of that because you cursed within the first few seconds.
Yeah. Talks about WoW more than Overwatch. True.
There it is.
Makes all the opinions based on past season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has the coldest takes that are also hot because they are so cold. Also true.
Yeah. Good point. Good point.
I don't even know what that means.
This guy's watched a lot of our content.
Sideshow is... Oh, it's disappeared again. Hello?
Like, a take from Matt would be like...
I do enjoy
it. Yeah, Sabiolbi is an in-game leader. You know, that would be a take from Matt.
Hold on. Well, Johnny goes, Johnny will make a ridiculous statement and then 2 weeks to try and gain traction. Then 2 weeks later, he's like, why is everybody coming at me for this? I didn't mean it.
I'm past those days. I've evolved as a person. Yep.
Well, Sideshow is
a person.
Sideshow is
LeBron talk.
Mr. Egg.
Mr.
About,
Egg.
About yeah. to surpass Fisher with the amount of teams he has left in a certain period of time. This is a direct quote. I fully appreciate Moff's impact because I have Chris on my team. I don't know if you ever said that, but
I did say that. I thought that was pretty good.
Did say that, yeah.
The analyst incarnation of Super Molding and Five Head at the same time. King of recency bias. I agree with that as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yaki yep. and Moff simp. Randomly yeah. grew back hair and changed his voice in the John Spencer episode. Because we didn't change the overlay.
Yeah.
Mine is somehow as progressively worse but funnier intros every week. I'm gonna have to give credit to the Paris coaching staff. I do say that a lot.
I don't think he's ever mentioned them by name. He's just like, I gotta give credit to these guys.
How about we start this long discussion in which you will all be discussing teams and I will eat pizza. Also true.
That's
suffering from a withdrawal of hero pool rants.
That's true.
It's Brent's player of the week, looking like an elf. Literally never watches NA matches. Wait, Krong is a rookie. I know. I went to hang out with Gesture in a jacuzzi and he told me Profit was washed. And I was out drinking with AKM and he told me Effect was rage stomping the whole match. How many times have I told that story?
Many like times.
So many times.
Yeah. And Toronto.
When I was on the desk, we were all predicting against Dallas, and I could see Effect's eyes. And it was just like a demon inside of him, just hurting. And then he went on to set a record in final blows in the league.
And Toronto really seemed like the lads. And also, apparently allergic to Jake's cats. I'm not allergic to cats anymore. I'm allergic to mosquitoes, but yeah.
I like the comment about the hero pools, because the most you've ever talked on this show has been about hero pools. And now that they're kind of like gone, I don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah,
read posts from Reddit like this.
Okay, let me read out the final. Wait, no, there's two more. Why is Custer in here? Anyway, Johnny's is actually not garbage takes. Scarred to the core by weekly power rankings that he's forced to make. Drinking away his sorrows in a weird wine glass.
The power rankings.
Almost goes bald with a haircut. The Swedish tank defender and got replaced by Golden Boy on the Valorant podcast. And then we've got Custer, who is not Babbo. I think the person who wrote this is a Custer fanboy, because I don't see a reason that you would include Custer anyway.
Yeah. I think he edited this in after he got popular. He was like, oh, I'm so good writing descriptions of people. I'm going to add Custer in.
He added not Babbo.
Like an encore.
not Babbo. Kariv Shill, I think that says. Lost to Platt Sideshow in a 1v1. Embodied the spirit of Mr. X and reinforced during summer. I don't know what that means.
Well, those two weren't there, right?
Oh, yeah. No, Johnny was there.
It wasn't there. I don't know, man. Anyway, so somehow did not end up in the dynamic Australian caster duo we all wanted. This guy is actually just rimming out Custer.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done. I'm not reading
this. I think
this
might be Custer on an alt account.
I'm not
just trying to get into Blackjack.
You know what's actually quite funny? When Johnny brought up the thread, Brett was like, oh, what are you talking about? The number one comment in the thread was 4 days ago from Bren.
I never said, what are you talking about?
Oh, you knew it?
You knew.
I know I've read it before, but I just don't like how people don't like me eating during the podcast.
Right.
Because people don't appreciate, but we record this quite late so that it can get out in the morning, you know, leak-free. Yeah. And sometimes that means I have to eat during the podcast.
Oh, what are you doing? We could just record it leading up.
Yeah.
What?
When it? I don't know. Do you have like a food schedule that you have to eat after 8 p.m.?
Some say it's unprofessional, but I think it adds a certain charm to the show that you don't really get anywhere else.
I think it's your brand. I think you should add it to your Twitter bio.
No, we gotta get a food sponsor so you eat something from this food sponsor every week during
that's
the show.
Genius,
people did say,
actually,
are you copying Brad Pitt? Because apparently he eats a lot in his films.
Does he? Oh, he does actually. Yeah, yeah. Brad Pitt famously eats quite significantly large amounts in each film.
This is our week 19 recap.
What happened?
We need to talk about this because we only got like one game to talk about, maybe.
Yeah, what happened in this recap? Like, I mean, the games are pretty one-sided. They were a little bit shit.
Just blowouts.
Yeah, there's some... Okay, so the meta was pretty set, right? So there wasn't like... It's not like you can really say that most teams had like a bad read on it or something, but some teams, yeah. I mean, like apart from Seoul, I mean... God damn, do we have Seoul as a separate topic? Because I could rant about them for weeks. Well, yeah, these guys are morons.
We have a separate match, and I wanted you to be just moaning
okay,
about it.
It is going to be a separate topic. So we're going to leave Seoul to after.
Can I just say before we get into the matches?
Yeah.
Brent, like this was like, we went into the 2 week hero pool thing, and I think we got a pretty bad hero pool. Like, removing D.Va and Brigitte and Echo, like, we got kind of unlucky.
Could have been worse.
I think
not
that's
gonna
my
lie.
Take.
I like seeing Tracer Ashe. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Tracer Ashe, though, was pretty similar to just, like, the May Melee no hero pools meta. You just couldn't play dive. So the only thing the hero pool did was just remove an option.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Kind of.
I almost feel like we're going to get this and then maybe some like Echo variations for the whole 4 weeks.
It seems like
however long it goes.
Yeah.
Like, it just depends. Just look at the draw for the hero pools, right?
Like, you'll just see like the same type of comp with just like maybe Brig brought in to just armor pack Tracer and then occasionally rally. Like,
yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, Tracers and Ashes are fun to watch for most people. So.
Yeah. So Paris played some fun shit as well.
This is where I want to start the conversation for the recap off. Some people have been coming into my stream and they've been wanting to know, where do you place Boston now that they've made all of these acquisitions and they seem to be going toe-to-toe with reasonable teams? Because this Paris-Boston match, it did go to map 5, and in a certain world, it may have been winnable for Boston as well.
Yeah.
What do we make of Boston right now in the state of them?
I mean, is it just mean to say they're better than Washington and Vancouver and that's about it?
Like, yeah, when I broke my power rankings into tiers, I feel like there's like a middle tier where there's like the LA Gladiators,
Atlanta
Reign, and someone else. Who's the third?
Valiant?
Dallas Fuel.
Oh, Dallas, right.
Yeah.
And it's like Boston are not quite like in that tier yet, but they're like knocking on the door.
Yeah.
And if they would have won this match, they would have been in that like middle of the pack tier.
I also
they're
think
better than like Houston and Toronto and shit.
You gotta look at this match and you gotta like break it down map by map, because the two maps that Boston actually won were just some of the most ridiculous throws coming out from Paris Eternal. This was their first match with Sparkle, and so they were trying to really heavily invest on him playing the Genji and then the Pharah on some occasions as well.
Yeah.
And on Kings Row and Rialto, running Sparkle and Nico has got to be one of the most disastrous decisions I've ever seen from a team. I mean, I just absolutely hated it. No, not ever, because you also have to consider that, like,
who are
this
you,
is
man?
A brand new roster and they're experimenting. But I just, it doesn't make sense conceptually. And then it didn't make sense when they actually ran it. And so you got Nico running full-time Tracer on Rialto. Where the fuck was Soon? How does that make any sense?
Yeah,
and then you've got Nico running Reaper and then Doomfist on King's Row. And I was at an absolute loss.
You know what killed me? I remember I was watching that and ZP was talking about Nico playing the Reaper on King's Row. And he's like, you know, I've seen him play it before back in 2015. I was like, fucking 5 years ago, for fuck's sake.
I remember that. CP was saying he was in the first Overwatch game he ever casted. He casted Nico.
Yeah, and he was talking about Nico playing Reaper. I was like,
I've never heard of a more ZP sentence was him calling back.
I was like, do you think Nico knows he can't pick up the souls on the ground anymore to get back?
Oh my god.
Get back the things.
It was a disastrous Reaper performance. Yeah. It was one of the worst Reaper games I think I've ever seen at an owl level.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, it really was that.
You're
no, like, it seriously
him.
Was that bad. Nico was just going for flanks constantly, but he's playing May Reaper. Like, that's okay if you're trying to play Reaper Doomfist or something and you're trying to just be a distraction. But he's playing May Reaper and he's going for these weird flanks and just getting rolled around by Jerry in the back. It was so strange.
The series had everything you wanted. It just had like the highlight moments. It also had just the Pepeg moments. Like, this was like a rare series where like you knew the outcome and you felt like they were just dragging it on for whatever reason, but it was fun.
Was it King's Road? They won King's Road because of Fusion's halt at the end, right? It just yoinked Paris away from the car.
That was really good.
Yeah. Boston were by far the better team throughout the whole of King's Road. Like, it was a bit of a throw from Boston, if you remember. They C9 touching point B, so they ended up, and then they kind of got rolled on point C, and they were like, oh, fuck. And they ended up going into overtime, but they had slightly more time on the clock.
What do you say, Johnny? No, I wasn't really gonna.
I was gonna move it forward a bit and wanted to hear your guys' opinion on Sparkle, because like his May performance,
right?
Bit shaky. But
his May's never
time,
been.
He played like weird. Like how much credit can you give him for like owning on Genji as well? You know.
But they invested a lot of resources into him to play well on Genji.
Yeah.
But I will also say as well, I think Sparkle had so much hype coming into this year. Do you remember the conversations we were having at the start of the year about Sparkle and Paris?
Oh, yeah.
And like, I think people were just expecting him to be this one-stop solution that was going to convert Paris into one of the best teams in the league. But there's players like that don't really exist in a game like Overwatch, I feel, because it's so much more based on team play. But even when he was playing in Contenders, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I don't think his May was that great.
Yeah, no. I actually felt that hype going into the season where I was like, oh, Sparkle is like the decay equivalent of this season or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I went back and looked at some of the VODs from like Gauntlet and even earlier. Yeah. And I was like, he's good and he's going to make a difference in an owl team. But he's not like the next superstar of the league. He has that potential and he's just 18, right? He can get to that level.
Yeah.
But he has some development to do as a player, I think. And his May really show that. I love the energy he brings, though. Like, he's fun to watch. He's so much fun to watch. And, you know, I criticize his May, but overall, I think it was a really good performance and it lived up to the hype. And I'm excited to see more.
I'd say, too.
Nuts.
Yeah, his Genji was sick. I think for a new player coming in, it's much easier to make that like crazy big impact playing like Hitscan. I think in the projectile role, like right now, I mean, what we see a lot of like Ashe Tracer, like maybe some May, like you don't really see players who have like tremendous, like right now, this would be the worst time to enter the league as like a tremendous Doomfist Genji Pharah player. Like you're never going to be able to play those heroes, you know, unless they give Genji a gun, like he's not
give him a Glock.
It's not gonna be around anytime soon, so I think you kind of have to look at him trying to fill in different roles and make that work, where I think you kind of see him at his best right when he was playing the Genji, and like how many resources the other team needed to do to like stop him at a lot of times. I remember Scott doing a play, I think it was from game 5, where he nanobladed and basically the other team had to pop all of their ultimates to just survive. I think though, like with the way the season's gone and with the way like projectile has gone throughout the season, it's going to be hard for him to find these massive holes for big impacts.
Yeah. The thing is, Paris were playing like this comp at the top of your screen here, where they're playing Ana and Mercy, and they're just basically all in on this big blade that's going to net them the win in the end. Yeah, like a halt nano blade that's just going to get them a team fight win. And they did the same thing on both of the control maps as well, just playing compositions that were designed to just hard pocket Sparkle, which I think it's one way to go, right? Like if you have a guy who's a crazy star player on certain roles, you can try and play off meta stuff constantly and just hope that he's good enough to be able to carry you through. And I think he is good enough on those roles to be able to give Paris wins. I just don't think that will work against the top teams.
I mean, Vancouver sort of did that with Huxley.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Why don't you think it will work against top teams?
Because I think that a team like the Shock, for example, is coordinated enough that they know that they can't allow, or they're clever enough as well, that they know they can't allow you to get that Dragon Blade up and just have a load of free space.
Yeah.
So they're going to be trying to punish you before you're even getting set up. And I think that teams like that are able to find the weaknesses of these comps much more than the lower level teams are, who tend to stick to their defaults.
I'd also say, too, no D.Va, no Brigand. So, like, in one of those clips I think we just showed on, like, Valskaya, like, he's, like, wall climbing up to the high ground, and he's taking a few shots, and he's able to dash away and get to safety, where the Sigma was playing by the Mega Health Pack. Like, if there's a D.Va there in that situation, the D.Va probably just flies out and finishes him off. Like, not having D.Va and Brig in the hero pool makes Genji a little bit more viable.
How is this any different, though, from when teams run the Pharah Mercy with an Ana and just play for the Nana Barrage for the point A win? Like Guangzhou all the time. They do this on like Eichenwald or Volskaya.
Well, the thing with that was when they're running the Sombra as well, right? Like that's a totally different meta as well that we had way back.
That's true. Yeah.
Way back when. I think that those kind of all-in comps though are more to do with the alts. And the other team is tends to be running the same kind of stuff. Like on Rialto, for example, Guangzhou's had a bunch of games over in Asia where the meta was running Pharah Widowmaker on that map. But if it's not the meta and you're trying to play it, if your only win condition is a big ultimate, then I think that it's easier for top teams to be able to abuse it. Like, there were multiple times where Guangzhou failed to run those kind of compositions because they couldn't get off a big EMP or big Barrage. What I'd be really interested to see for Paris is Sparkle playing Tracer and soon playing Ashe, something like that. Ooh. And seeing if Sparkle is good enough at his off heroes, because I do think that he's a really talented player. He just seems to have raw natural talent, and I've seen him play some hit scan before in the past, like little bits and bobs of Tracer, and occasionally he's flicked over to some other hit scan stuff as well. Yeah. It's not like comfortable for him, but you can tell that the guy just has so much raw talent that Paris might be able to get away with that, and that might be viable for them. And so I wouldn't, if they can build out some meta stuff as well as some off meta stylish stuff, that could be, they could be really dangerous, because if they can play Sparkle to like an 80% degree on his off heroes and then suddenly unleash him on the Genji with a niche composition, that makes him much more unpredictable.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the Tracer Ashe, because this meta felt like it was made for Valiant coming into this with their hitscan players. Just to recap that one, and they dismantled Washington, and people are going to be looking at Washington. I saw a couple of comments actually that I think were quite unfair of them saying, wow, Washington acquired Janu and Stitch and they still look just as bad. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. Are they still playing on Haiping? They're not in the US, right?
They're in Washington.
Yeah.
Okay.
But even then, I mean, I don't want to go into a debate now, but I'm going to tease it, and I don't know, you know, how good Stitch is.
Yeah. As in terms of hit scan and how he compares to other players,
I mean, also, what do they expect? They're going to take two players, put them with a bunch of people who have been pretty bad this season, then everyone's just going to magically become pretty good? Like, I don't think it's kind of unrealistic.
You know, like Boston. Could have asked
they almost won a map. There's their honeymoon.
I think people, though, are looking at this. I think they're looking at this Washington team and they're just expecting overnight improvements, but because of the switch to all Korean, right? But they're also playing against Valiant, and I think people still think of Valiant as a shit team. So they're probably looking at this role and they're questioning
This meta is amazing for Valiant.
Yes.
Valiant was always an underdog team that could sometimes find an opportunity against a top team. This meta is perfect for them. It's like they could actually be a top team in this meta. They could be a top three.
We've got another week of
in
it,
this
which
meta.
Is important.
If I remember correctly, they have a super easy schedule as well. I'm going to bring it up, but
it's not that easy. They play against the Mayhem next, I think.
Yeah.
And so that's like, it's
that's
winnable, but it's an amazing game.
Unless they play Lucio Brig.
Oh, I was thinking of the Gladiators. I casted the Gladiators. I knew it was one of the LA teams, and they had an easier schedule. Like, yeah, the Gladiators play Houston and Washington.
If Valiant managed to beat the Mayhem, though, then they go up against the Paris Eternal. And, I mean, there's a potential for Valiant to go 1-2 here, but there's also a more likely potential for them to go 2-1 or even 3-0.
Yeah, I mean, that would be that's interesting, because that sets up a scenario where both LA teams could be in your top four, and obviously some people from the last go around aren't going to be up there.
I got to bring this up now, because he didn't make my player of the week, but Unter the new assistant coach for Valiant, putting out one of the most ridiculous, actually just a tweet that just reminded him, you're in the Overwatch League now, so you probably can't, you can't really get away with that kind of banter. Where he said,
what do you
if
say,
you've
Brad?
Ever wondered what Shax's dick tastes like, please direct your inquiries to the Washington Justice starting six. I
appreciate that, though. Like, he's, you know, testing the waters, you know? He's saying, how far can you go?
He is alluding.
It's a sick tweet.
He is alluding to Shax's face-fucked Washington. So I can see why he had to delete the tweet.
Oh, I don't think that they should have to delete the tweet, though. Like, it's not offensive. It's just banter.
Yeah, well, I don't think he wanted to get fined.
But like, I just don't think that. I think that we should be not that we should be cultivating a situation
hostile.
Where people, hostile. But I think that as long as it's for entertainment's sake, and there's then I think that a bit of stuff like that is perfectly fine.
How long has
he
been
you have
with
to realize
Italian
it's banter.
Now?
Or like a few weeks, a couple of weeks.
His direct deposit may not even be set up yet. I mean, I'm thinking about the fine money. I'm thinking about, is he gonna have the fine money straight away? Like, McGravy's gonna be fucking giving out loans to everybody on the Valley. 5% interest, fucking making racks on everybody's fines.
I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I'm like, yeah, it's a video game. Yeah, it's for kids. Same time. It's great bands.
I think it might have been a little bit too far, personally. I don't know if I've just become Americanized.
Is it for kids? We sell fucking Overwatch Nerf guns. Of course it's for kids.
Yeah, I mean, okay, there we go. Yeah, if
it's not TF2 anymore, get over it.
But what kind of kid has followed Unter on Twitter? You know what I mean? Like,
there's some like 12-year-olds browsing like competitive Overwatch.
They may be watching
Plat
Chat.
I don't know, I don't really think that it makes too much sense. Like, if Unta can post a video of a porn star announcing his arrival to the league, and like people can retweet shit with swear words in and stuff like that, then I don't really get why this should be a problem. But
no, I like it.
Yeah, there's a chance he doesn't get fined. I mean, I think the league has loosened up a lot of their restrictions in the past, where they wanted to appear as like. Yeah, a bit more family friendly. I mean, the Overwatch League social media channel is retweeting like stuff with swear words, and they wouldn't have done that
for a second. I thought you said they retweeted this. I was like, oh, we definitely loosened up the reins on social. I was like,
but it feels like they've loosened up a little bit. I think because at the end of the
maybe
day,
maybe not like, this loose.
Yeah, maybe not this loose, but it's. He, like I said, just to repeat what I said earlier, he is alluding that Shax has face-fucked the Washington Justice.
I think the more literal you get with any of these
exactly.
But that's the mental imagery it gave me, and that made me uncomfortable.
It gave you precise mental imagery of a Danish dick.
I didn't need that.
I mean, I've seen
you
Shax, and I just didn't need it in my mind. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, when you looked at Johnny Sins announcement video, you didn't think of Johnny Sins as like the porn actor.
Hmm? Yeah, I did.
Never mind. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. No, that's what I'm saying. You didn't think about it. Like, you made it too literal, Bren. It was too unnecessary. It's unnecessary.
When he had the video with Johnny Sins, did you not think of Johnny Sins the porn guy?
Well, he's also just a regular person.
This tweet is tasteful. And it's kind of like spicy, you know, from Nero saying
that's
a good
one.
Wishes they could play against some of the NA teams to beef their record up. I think that's reasonable. There's an argument to be made now that the NA region might be stronger than the Asian region.
You make the argument.
Yeah, I think you could make that kind of argument with Seoul looking really shaky so far this week and Valiant and Mayhem looking really good. I think that, you could very easily say that there's more good NA teams, but there's always going to be more bad NA teams as well. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get on that topic and talk about the Seoul Dynasty because they
Jesus Christ.
Yo, what is wrong with this team?
We recorded a head-to-head where I said that Seoul was not going to be good for the rest of the year, and Josh was like, no, you're ridiculous. And then I watched this match, and I was like, thank God I took that side of the argument.
I know. It's
appalling. Like the timing of it was so perfect. Yeah. I had just gone on record arguing that I thought the Seoul Dynasty would stop doing this dumb shit. And I wanna kind of run you through what happened here. Because on the defense of Hanamura and the defense of Hollywood, when they were playing double shield, Seoul Dynasty, they looked good. They had good performances. It looked similar to their main melee kind of standings, except on the point A defense of Hollywood, they ran a Bastion. They ran Profit on the Bastion, as if they don't have enough respect for New York that they'd be able to break that comp.
Who just got that's fucking the... hacksaw?
Yeah.
No, but can you not see the justification nonsense. For the Bastion?
What, sorry?
Can you not see the justification for the Bastion?
No, I think it's horse shit against a good team, actually.
He
got what was the buff? I mean,
it was like reduced recoil reduced or something.
Spread? No,
yeah. Like, yes, spread. That'll reduced help spread. You.
But one of the main options to deal with like a Bastion, maybe this is just my flat brain speaking, but it's like Sombra, right? And Sombra has just been taken out. I could definitely see a world that Seoul had success with that comp and then tried it against New York and just got shit stomped.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not saying that Seoul were completely baselessly throwing strats against the wall. I'm sure they did practice some of these comps and they had success against them. But I think that Seoul thought too outside the box and tried to like five head their opponents instead of just sticking. Like, it's a double shield meta. Just play double shield. You're really good at double shield. The thing with the Bastion was that if you play it against bad teams that don't understand how to play the shield war, then they will just run into the Bastion and they will lose their shields faster because of the damage. But New York just played line of sight perfectly, got their play around on a flank, and they just crushed the shield in. Because you have to put an Orisa shield in front of the Bastion at all times. You can't ever hide. So whereas the New York teams, New York can hide. They can do like a bit of damage to the shield, hide to replenish their shield, and then come back out with a better one. And so it just gives you an advantage in the shield war, even though the Bastion's pumping out damage. And I don't think that Seoul really thought it through.
Yeah.
I really like we talked about it on head to heads, but I really like New York with this Nene and Haxall DPS combo.
They looked good. Like, they looked really good.
Like, that's one of the reasons I really liked them in the second half here of the season. So to see it actually happen was really sick.
Haxall's Mei was amazing, by the way, in this series. I know that he doesn't get much talk for his Mei play, but there's a huge difference to me. A lot of people in my chat were comparing Haxall and Sparkle because they play, you know, roughly the same roles. And I think that you can make analogies to how much the Titans tried to force Haxall Genji in the past and how Paris were playing this week. But one of the most enormous differences, I think, between Haxall and a player like Sparkle is just how intelligent Haxall is at being able to pick up these heroes like Brig or like Mei and be able to play them at the top level. His awareness and understanding of the flow of the game is just way above these normal mechanical god tier players.
I mean, a lot of people were making that comparison when he was signed to Who Are You? And it's like, yeah, I can sort of like see where you're coming from. But I don't think people, like, obviously people respect Haxall, but he really is like an ungodly player. Like, he is, you know, a world star caliber player. And so like, yeah, you can make certain comparisons, but, you know, I don't know if LeBron is the best comparison, but like, he is that kind of big name in Overwatch, and you have to put some respect to that name.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of odd because like we knew like when all of the Vancouver players got released, we kind of looked at it as just obviously all of them as a collective, as a group. And it was such a crazy scenario. And then we got the new team announced so fast that we didn't really kind of, I mean, we talked about like, where would this player be good? Where would this player, fit the best? But we didn't really talk about the players like individually. Like, if your team had an opportunity to add Haxall in the middle of the season, he would be starting on what? Just about every team, right?
Yeah. Well, I didn't think he'd be starting that often on New York.
He was almost like the MVP last year.
Because what I'd heard internally is that he was a headstrong player. And
But that's what you want.
Sometimes, but he needs like a strong coaching hand. And I didn't know if New York would have that.
But
so I thought
this was a perfect fit because of that.
Right. I thought that was, I agree. I think New York needed somebody who was going to go in there and be like, yo, this is how we're going to do shit. And we're going to get aggressive and we're going to fucking go. And because otherwise they're just, we're never going to change. Like they needed somebody to force change.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I think that the only doubt in my mind about New York, the reason that I was hesitant to jump on board the bandwagon is because we had seen them fail before in the past with these aggressive flex DPS players. But I mean, they didn't even really play Haxal on anything that you would define as that kind of role this week. So I think the jury's still out on that a little bit, but you can tell that Haxal just fit into the team incredibly well. Nene arguably made a bigger difference to this team than Haxal did in terms of this week's performance. He was lights out on the Ash and he kind of rolled Fitz around.
We hadn't seen him in so long. He was in New York for the dental work stuff for like, I want to say like he, last time he played was almost like week 5.
Yeah. Was it like 10
plus
weeks? We
looked it up. Yeah. I'll bring the numbers up, but he hasn't played in like forever. So to see him come back and just
14 weeks he's had off.
Damn.
Really?
That is crazy.
Yeah.
We haven't seen Nene since week 5.
Yeah. Week 5. Yeah. Cause I remember we were talking about that, on a head to heads. We hadn't seen him in months. Even before that, he was kind of splitting time, but you don't know if he was splitting time then because, like, you know, he was having like pain from like the tooth surgery or whatnot that he had, like dental work. So to see him back in the lineup, and I believe he had just gotten back to Korea only like a few days before they were going to play.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't back in Korea long.
I was a kind of cautious about Nene as well because he hasn't played in ages and I thought that he wouldn't have scrimmed particularly either, but he just came straight back and it looked amazing. So, but I think a lot of that was due to Sol. Like, I don't think you can overstate how bad Sol was in this match.
Oh yeah absolutely.
You know, like Sol absolutely threw away a potential win on Hanamura, by the way. Their attack was dreadful. I did a VOD review of that, and I'm just molding the whole time during the Sol attack on Hanamura. They never grouped up. Their ult usage was dreadful. They had a couple of fights where they played well, but they didn't quite make it, you know, and you can't blame that. You know, sometimes that just happens in Assault. But a lot of the time, they were just pushing, and they do this dumbass Sol Dynasty thing where they just push somebody behind. Like, look at Prophet's positioning right now. And they did it with Gesture on Hollywood as well. And then they come in around the side and they're like trying to take scrappy engagements, and Fitz is coming through on the right. And it just devolves into absolute chaos.
I remember
chaos
this moment
and anarchy
working out for them.
Yeah, it works out for them kind of halfway. Yeah. And then New York end up clutching it out. It was a full hold in the end.
It looks like one of
what the fuck is this?
It looks like one of your games or nobody on your team is in voice and you're just like, you just pick one person and you follow them, and then somebody else picked a different person, they follow them, and there's just fucking bodies everywhere.
Yeah, I mean,
it's so weird that they like didn't get over this though after they were so impressive in the main melee. And then, like, you know, in the drama of the week on competitive Overwatch, it was like Volamel wrote that article that like Prophet was, you know, bad work ethic, and then Arnold came out and was like, actually he's like has the best work ethic. But then you're like, well, okay, Prophet has great work ethic, but the team is inconsistent, and it's just like, what the hell is going on? And it's just all over the place. It's just a messy situation.
Nene got back to Korea, by the way, June 7th.
Right, so he had like a week.
I'm just disappointed in Sol Dynasty. Like, when you have a break like we had and you placed like second and you were so close to winning, like, you'd expect the team to come back looking how like Florida did, where they look like, hey, like, let's build upon what we just did. It looked like they just like they were just taking the piss. Like, I mean, they just kind of went out there and just did it. Like, it looked like they regressed, or this is just proof of they are what we kind of thought they were, where they're going to be up and down depending on the weeks.
The thing is, they weren't up and down when they played double shield for the most part. Like, every time they came out and they played double shield, even in this match, they still were good. I like, fuck me, I haven't even got to the most tilting part about this entire game. They open up with the Winston Zarya Reaper Tracer composition. And this is just la poo poo.
Sol was the one that played the Roadhog, right?
No, that was New York played Roadhog into them. New York played the Roadhog to like counter it, because
Shanghai ran a little bit of this comp and a similar composition when they played against London as well. But this was a tragedy from the Seoul Dynasty. They looked like Marvel had no idea when he was supposed to be applying bubbles and what space he was supposed to be taking. Fitz wasn't coordinated. Gesture was just jumping in from a mile away instead of trying to... They never approached. They never put Profit in position. And they're playing a comp that doesn't even suit their strength. Just playable shields, you dumbasses. Like, whose decision is this? How do they not know the strengths of their team?
Imagine if last year I came on the show and said, yeah, next year you're going to see Seoul Dynasty with Gesture on Winston and Marvel playing Zarya into NYXL's Hacksaw's May. You'd be like, the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
This was just atrocious.
Though. Like, it's not even... I kind of thought about it some more after watching Shanghai play it.
Yeah.
And I don't even think that the comp itself is a throw pick. Like, I don't think the comp is good by any means. And I don't think the comp is a good idea. And I do think that, like, a Genji Tracer version of it is better considering how difficult it is for Fitz to get in position. But they just played it awfully. They never set up for a dive. It was like they just went... They just sat there and then they went, okay, 3-2-1, let's go. And they just jumped and bubbled and tried to run at them.
Yeah. You're playing when you play a comp like this, you were saying that you would prefer a Genji Tracer version of it.
Yeah.
The issue though is that
they have to get...
I don't think that's as good in the neutral fights. Like with Genji, you're just relying on your blade a lot. With Reaper, you can take a lot of these neutral fights. But the win condition for this comp is anti-nades, right?
Yeah.
To try and
just getting an early pick. You can burn down if you manage to dive effectively, you can kill either the Ashe or the Zen. Depending on where the immortality field goes, you can kill one of those pretty easily. But you have to avoid poke early on.
What do you feel like Souls, like, do you feel like they need more like a different player to get in the mix, like to sort things out, or do you feel like it's a coaching team thing? Like, what do you think it is?
I mean it's very hard to say, right? But you gotta question the coaching at some point, right? Because I feel like a Changgun has been in this position so many times. Like, I don't know what's going on, but like, I want to know what's going on, and I'm not gonna write an article about it because then they're gonna come out and say I'm wrong. But it's just so frustrating to see this, and we don't get answers. And I like, it's a situation like this, it's so hard to speculate what is going wrong. I think that there's probably a loud voice within the team that has these crazy ideas you were talking about, Josh. There's like thinking outside the box and then like forces the team to do it. And then the rest of the team is like, okay, we're doing this, but we don't really understand it. I think, oh my God. I think it was actually Nico. I read an interview he made in French or something. And he was like, every time we play a composition that I play in Paris Eternal, I want to understand like every little detail about the composition, how it works, and how the coaches like envision it playing out. And that is really what you need sometime to like really elevate to the next level and play like perfect, you know, Overwatch. But it feels like sometimes Seoul Dynasty just kind of half-ass it, where it's like, oh, we're going to play this composition and here's the idea. Dude, and then they don't do it flawlessly.
It's got to be the coaches. I can't see a player coming up with this.
Players, I think?
Well, no, it could definitely be the players. Definitely. There's many players that are just like Pepega.
But
they just come up with dumb shit.
Players tend to just stick with what they know rather than trying to reinvent the wheel or cheese comps, I feel.
Players also copy other teams that they lose against, though, as well. And I can see a world in which Shanghai like use this comp, because remember, Shanghai love running Fearless on Winston. So if they could find a way to force Fearless Winston... And remember that there's no D.Va as well. So if you want to force Fearless Winston, it either looks like a Winston Ball or a Winston Zarya. And I my pet theory is that Shanghai ran this comp against Seoul. Seoul realized that they were kind of getting pooed on by it. They decided to run it themselves and just didn't understand why it worked.
What do you guys think about Marvel on the off tank?
Sigma's good. The rest are pretty bad.
Like, I almost...
That's a pickup you need. I want to see
them have an off tank that they feel comfortable with, like running.
Is Michelle still on this team?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he is.
Well, also, like, how good is Michelle Zarya? I feel like Michelle for his Sombra and
apparently Marvel's is better. Yeah.
I want to see Marvel get some time back at main tank. Like, he was so good last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really good. I was actually hyping up Marvel going into the season. I thought Marvel would get most of the playtime because
Gesture.
He impressed me so much. Yeah. I thought Gesture was going to be like the Winston player of this team and maybe Orisa.
I would love to know how that started with him on the off tank. Like, did he want to move to off tank? Like, did he just
probably
kind
started
of
from
get
when
they, thrown
every,
into
every
it?
Every team was playing like, the rush comp, right? Every team was playing rush comp. They needed to play double shield. Gesture's a really good Orisa. Marvel's a really good Sigma. It makes sense. Right? And
yeah.
then it just evolved from there where they were just like running probably Marvel
fuck
in the off tank
role.
Fuck it,
play D.Va too. Yeah, fuck it.
And they were
you
like,
play some-
fuck it. Put him on D.Va, put him on Zarya. Whatever, bro. Like, I don't know. This team, I'm actually done. They don't deserve any more time on our podcast.
Whoa. I just want to say as well, I listened to the Tactical Crouch podcast where Arnold was on and he was like, I'm a really competitive person and CEO. And he was like, I really want to win the Overwatch League because he thinks it would be really good for Seoul Dynasty. You know, like, it's good for all teams, obviously.
The sad
but
thing
like,
is, I could see them winning.
Him. And so, hold on, Bren. So, I'm just... Personal message to you, Arnold. If you are that competitive, put your money where your mouth is and sign a sick off tank. No, not me. You've ruined the entire thing back. Ruined it all. Cut it. Cut them all.
They could bring in Sideshow. Both of the teams that Sideshow played for are 1-0.
True.
This week. Yep. Yeah.
True.
Unbeaten whilst having Sideshow on the roster.
The sad thing is, I can see a world where Seoul do win.
Look. Most of the time when people win like playoffs in sports, in esports too, like tournaments, it's just somebody who gets hot like over the course of a weekend or something along those lines. Yeah, most of the time it is.
Are you sure you're not just picking out the moments where it does happen and you're remembering it?
How many times does the favorite actually like go on and win? Like last year with the Shock, sure. You look at other esports though, like a lot of tournaments, like a team goes on a stretch for a while, but then somebody else just kind of wins.
Yeah, but
out of
I think
nowhere,
you're just
seems,
remembering
but...
the moments where they do happen because they're upsets.
Yeah, I would be interested to know what the spread actually is. I can think of a lot of examples of it going both ways. I don't really know. I feel like tournament victories, sure, but like the big championships, I feel like there are many times when the favorite
at
wins.
At least in console stuff, there's been a ton of times where just the favorites don't win and come in like second, third. But
yeah.
Let's talk about... Especially,
yeah.
Let's talk about Numlocked,
okay.
Who some people call the British Fearless.
He gets a whole. We made a long term for Numlocked. We made a whole segment.
Yeah, we made a whole segment for Numlocked because I think it's worth talking about. I didn't put the segment in because I actually do no work on the show, but the I do think it's worth talking about because Numlocked is a guy who, me and Josh have known him for a while. We've known him since he played Team Fortress 2. He tried to make it in League of Legends. He's got a really cool story, actually. I think you interviewed him once, didn't you, Josh?
Yeah, I did. He actually went and played for in Turkey. He went to Turkey to try and play competitive League of Legends because they have their own like LCS kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he said it was a fucking horrible experience. Like, he absolutely hated it.
I love players having experience like that.
But yeah, he was at the... He was, you know, absolutely one of the best ever in Europe at TF2, went over and made it to a semi-pro level in League of Legends. No. Made
one
it
of
to
the
like
best
a...
ever in League of Legends.
Yeah. And then, he's been in and out of the Overwatch League. He had one map in the
one
Overwatch
map.
League, I think.
Shanghai Dragons.
In and out of the Overwatch League, playing one map. This is his day.
I remember it was Gibraltar. I remember watching it and thinking, oh my God, how can you do your B team dirty like this?
Yeah.
Because I can't remember the circumstances, but it wasn't the full B team, right?
No, they subbed in like half of it, and they had no
it was
synergy.
Like half the B team, and then
They had visa issues for, I think it was Izzyaki and Finzi.
Oh,
no, it wasn't Izzyaki. Izzyaki wasn't playing at the time.
Oh, really? Who was it then?
It was. I think it was Finzi.
Was it Verbo?
No.
Season one?
No, not Verbo. Verbo, I think, might have been playing. I don't know.
Let me look, because we can do this quite easily. We can just look on Overdrive.gg at Numlocked's match history. Let's have a look.
Wasn't KSF on that team?
Oh, KSF. Yeah, it was. I think KSF.
Oh, yes, because at the time he had issues performing on stage. I mean, yeah.
No, I think that...
No, but it was Kariv. It was Kariv that played. Bunny and KSF were part of the B team, so they got subbed in. But Space and Kariv stayed there from the... from the normal roster. And I believe that the reason was because they had issues with, I thought it was Izzy Aki, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, anyway.
There was a reason they had to split it up. They didn't
to get
do
back
it
on track. Yeah, it was visa issues. The players just weren't even in the country was the reasoning. But they put them in thinking that they were going to give them map experience, and then they just did them dirty because, like, they did Numlock dirty, I guess, because I remember that map, and it was pretty horrific, right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
It was Izzy Aki. He joined in April of 2018.
Really?
Yeah, he just had visa issues forever, so he didn't actually get fielded.
Yeah, well, there you go. He's been grinding in contenders to the same degree that Fearless has, and he has honestly a similar kind of hero pool to Fearless as well in a lot of ways. There's a lot of parallels, weirdly enough.
Yeah. Sorry. What do you mean by similar hero pool? You think that his Winston is fantastic?
I think his Winston is his best role.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I actually don't know.
Wasn't he signed originally, or the idea was to have him as a coach?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think so.
That
was the rumor anyway. He was going to get signed as a coach and retire as a player.
On Toronto?
But then he got signed as a player.
Yeah, to Toronto. And I think they kind of liked his mental enough and whatnot to bring him in as a player.
Well, this is a topic that we can get into because it's quite fitting, though. But there's like... It's not really talked about a lot in esports, but when a player gets a showing like that, if you get a reputation in a league for just not being good or whatever, it can be so hard to get back in and get a second chance in the same sort of league. Yeah. I can think of countless players off the top of my head, but I'm not going to name them because they do have a reputation internally that they're just like not good teammates, despite the fact that that's not the case. And I don't want to keep reiterating that storyline, right? It's interesting though because he's been given an opportunity to redeem himself, and I'm now interested to see how far they go. Because Beast, I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I would say he was definitely the weakest link on Toronto.
I don't think Beast was like bad for Toronto. I just think they needed somebody with a little bit more experience, like a Numlocked type of player, or kind of thinking in the same vein, somebody like a Fact Fiction who's had a ton of like main tank calling experience for a team.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Or like
Costa said that as well, which is like, you know, going into the season, you sort of question like who was going to shot call for this team. Was it going to be Beast and Kellex? Because like, you know, Kellex is a sound, level-headed player, but you know, I think you prefer Numlocked and Cruz as like sort of like vocal and emotional leaders of this team, and actually inspires some confidence. And you know, then you have like Logix with the firepower and Sherfor bringing what he can, and like suddenly you got like a pretty good team with two emotional leaders and like firepower on most roles. So like Kariv popping off, like now you're starting to like round out the team, and you know, you're in a pretty good direction. So it's an interesting time for Toronto.
Like Toronto's like not as tragic as like some of the other teams. I mean, there are some tragic teams in the league. I mean, there are some ones that are just not very good. But Toronto,
we can't talk about Boston. Like everyone thinks Boston, you can't talk about Boston.
Well, I think Boston's even teams that are doing quite well now are still tragic because the expectations we set up, like Seoul, tragic team, Dallas, tragic team.
Toronto's got 8 losses, but I believe 3 of those are in game 5 scenarios that could have like gone either way. So they're right on the cusp of being like a mid to able team I honestly think they have the talent to do it. And I think a part of the reason they can do it is because some of the teams we thought that would be really good or excel have kind of just been mediocre. Where I think Toronto, maybe if Numlock can kind of bring that shot calling with Cruz, like you mentioned, Bren, they have a chance.
I think they have potential to be that sort of the team that's just breaking into sort of the middle of the pack. But beyond that, I don't know if they've got what it takes, because to break into the upper section of teams, to get into the really top teams, you need really just raw firing power from some individual players on more than just one role. So I'm not just looking at, you know, Logix or Sherfor when he's really on fire. But you also need the coaching staff to have a good understanding of how to best utilize the pieces you've got.
So Toronto's had 4 game 5s and they've lost 3 of them.
Right.
Yeah.
So just a bunch of chokers, really, is what you're trying to say.
Well, no, I mean, usually game fives, like, those series are so close, there's sometimes a little bit of a coin flip to where they're not far off from being a team that could easily be, like, 500 at the middle point of the season, and we're talking about them in a completely different light.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are clearly bored of this topic.
We could be having a conversation in, like, a few weeks where it's like, is Toronto and Boston Uprising better than Atlanta and like Dallas?
Oh my god. I mean,
might
I don't
get
know.
To that point.
What the hell Atlanta is going on really in the next few weeks?
Atlanta really is slipping, man. Well, they are slipping.
Yeah.
Johnny's
free fall down the standings.
Johnny's looked ahead of the schedule. Next week is Atlanta Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah, Atlanta Toronto.
Johnny, dude.
It shouldn't
I'm bragging
be
about not looking at the schedule. Let's go.
Atlanta played against Toronto in the May Melee, and they shit on them. So I'm kind of hoping that they can do the same, because I still have hope for Atlanta. It's a team that...
Yeah.
They're a team that I think at some point in the season can click, and they'll be good.
Yeah, I'm still
I think that they just need... They need to click. For starters, I don't think this meta is good for them. I don't think they have a natural... I mean, you could say that Sharp's their natural Tracer player, but for whatever reason, they keep running Edison. Erster didn't make any difference when he came in for them just to play the Mei on Anubis, but it shows, I suppose, that he's alive.
How sad, bro. Like, you got Erster and you resort him to, like, a Mei one trick and bring him in on Temple of Anubis to play Mei. I mean...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, my God.
The guy's not being put in a position to succeed at all, but I don't know. I feel like if Atlanta had the same thing last year where they were showing glimmers of being a top team, they had some upset results against the best teams, even though they were pretty inconsistent, and then they kind of found themselves towards the end. I could see the same thing kind of happening here. They've got the talent on the roster, I think.
Yeah.
They've never really gelled.
And like then you have to start making power rankings, and you're like, you have that like holy shit moment where it's like, holy shit, is Boston Uprising better than Atlanta Reign? Like, I had that moment this week, and I put Atlanta above Boston because, you know, I think they're a better team. But I still had that moment, and at some point, their results have to come. And, like, Baby Bay even said what you said in the interview or whatever they showed on the broadcast, where it was like, we just have to click. But that's, you know, it's pretty scary when you're in that situation or like, can we click soon? Right. You know,
there's a difference between a team like Atlanta are at their lowest point right now, and they're still better than Boston. And Boston there's no chance that Boston are going to make a run in the playoffs. I mean, there just is no chance. Whereas with Atlanta, there's an outside chance that they could make some kind of run in the playoffs. So I think there's a difference between being like, Your current performance is 14th, 15th, whatever the fuck it is, but you have a ceiling to be in the top 10. That's a much better position to be in as a team than to be you're performing at your peak, but you're still at like a 13th.
Yeah, I mean, this is for power rankings. But like if we get to the point where we would, you know, at the end of the season, where we're like, yeah, Boston had a really shitty start, but towards the end, they were actually like a mid-table team, and we'd rather have Boston than Atlanta. Like, I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm sleep deprived. The reason I'm not talking a lot this podcast is because I didn't get any sleep and I'm really tired. But, you know, I'm trying.
Let's do predictions. Let's move away from everything and go to a completely different topic.
Covering up for me.
Predictions time. Okay. I don't know what the first match is that we're talking about. I guess we could just bring it up because we're doing Josh's predictions live because... I mean, I don't think this is that surprising, though, is it?
Nah.
So Seoul versus Guangzhou is our first match.
To take Guangzhou.
We've gone Guangzhou. Josh Wilkinson, who is notorious for getting paid by Guangzhou under the table. Who are you going with?
I really want to believe in Seoul.
High?
No, I'm not high. I feel like because it's so obvious that Seoul made horrific mistakes in their game against New York. They're not the kind of mistakes where it's like they played badly. They just chose awful compositions repeatedly. And then they also played a little bit badly on top of that.
So you want to predict Seoul?
Oh, God.
I will say
just think little, about this, Josh.
Do you remember the main melee when we were coming into it and we were having the same conversation trying to predict Sol's matches, and we were all saying with our brackets, we were like, there's no way Sol will go past round one. And then Matt did and then tried to change his mind.
Yeah.
We all said the same about Sol at the start of May Melee, and then they just ran all the way to the finals. So you never really know with this team. They are quite literally a coin flip. So what do you
like? Think about what Guangzhou Charge are going to be playing this week, right? Like with the current hero pools. Unless the Asian meta trends totally differently to what we've seen in North America so far, that what we've seen is Double Shield Ash Tracer being like the default. And what are you playing there? Like, who's your Tracer player for the Guangzhou Charge? Nero? Nero's been decent, but I don't think that he's been amazing.
Is Nero back in the country? I think he is, right?
I don't know, man. This really should be Sol Dynasty's win, but I'm going to predict that they throw it away. I'm going to agree with you guys. Okay. I'm going to go with the Guangzhou Charge, but not because Guangzhou are better. I think if both of these teams are playing at their, like, playing how they should play, Sol would win. But I think, fuck off, Sol. You've lost me.
No, that's literally where I came from, too. I was the same. I was like, I think Sol is probably the better team in this meta, but I think I just can't trust them. And like, Marvel is probably a better Sigma than Krong, you know? Maybe.
Yeah.
But it's like,
yeah, I think so.
Just not convinced.
All right.
Yeah.
What's the next match?
Can't commit.
Oh, God. Poor Sol Dynasty.
London Chengdu. Right now, as it is, I am the only one to go to London. Matt and Johnny, you've gone Chengdu. Josh.
Big Sanguinar fan.
Who are you going with? I'm a huge Sanguinar fan. I Yep, love him.
London looked shocking in their game against Shanghai. Yeah. But it's not that they looked... They were really scared. They just were so passive throughout the whole game. But I don't think they'll be... I don't think they'll perform as badly against the Chengdu Hunters. But I like Chengdu in Double Shield. I think they're actually pretty decent at that. And Paris has already shown that you can get away with playing Genji at some points here. So
you know Jinmu's doing it.
Fuck it, I'm on the Hunters train, dude. Choo-choo. Yeah. Let's go, Jinmu.
Wow. Like how London lost to Shanghai, it's just like the most disappointing Overwatch to me. Like when I see a team like London just like stand still and just like immobile, like a critter, like a small insect.
They just
like,
roll over and die.
Paralyzed by fear.
Yeah, and you're like, what are you doing?
This is one
it's
of the
disappointing.
Things we talked about at the start of the year with London, with the players they were picking up, because they're very inexperienced, right? Is one of the things that sometimes teams or players need to get over is showing their opponents too much respect. Happens from time to time. I don't think they're going to be showing Chengdu that much respect. I think Jinmu has a reputation for working as a part-time clown. And they should. I think that the London should be able to find their courage again in this match. I think they... Glister as well in a hit scan meta. I mean, just put them on the Ash or something. Like, I'm expecting them to actually do something good. But we still don't know whether or not Asia's actually going to settle on the same Ash Tracer meta.
Yeah.
But I would say Chengdu is a bit on the rise. Like they're not Hang Chao Spark level.
They could be.
Like, they're breaking into that. You know, I feel like recently, you know, this is pretty subjective, but I feel like recently Chengdu has had decent performances, and are like could contest with those teams.
They
like they're not
the
in the bottom tier zone. True. Well, you know, they got some good players on there.
I feel like Chengdu have been consistently trying to break into that for the last 2 years. You know? Like, we're in a perpetual state of mediocrity.
Didn't they make playoffs last year?
They made it into the play-ins.
Play-ins.
Oh, frick.
Yeah.
Well, they're one of my favorite teams to watch, just because you're going to get something batshit good or bad, and then like their players on individual skill are just really, really good. I mean, sometimes they just don't play with each other at all, but
I like watching.
They're fun to watch.
Jinmu's it doesn't. Sometimes you actually just think that they just picked him up off the street.
He's like, the bread of the APAC region.
He really is. He's a man after my own heart. Anyway, all right, I'm the lone one predicting London. What's the next, Mitch? What are we watching? Okay. This is, I think, quite reasonable, to be honest. Well.
Yeah, I put this one in here because I was like, is someone actually going to be the madman?
Someone got the balls enough to do
someone
it.
Someone have the balls. I think there's a chance.
I don't know whether I'm just way too naive and optimistic, but for I still think there's a tier between the Toronto and Atlanta. I think that Toronto have looked better recently. Like they came out and they 3-0'd the Vancouver Titans, despite the fact that they went to 5 against them last time they played. They look a bit more coordinated. I think Numlock's good for them, but I think this it might not be easy, but it should be pretty simple.
I think the only thing for me separating a team like Atlanta from where like Seoul is that like Atlanta's lows aren't near Seoul's lows, right? Like when Seoul like that Seoul just like they get blown out of some games, like they just don't look there. Like Atlanta, like when they lose, they're still putting up a fight. Like they're not like they don't just kind of pack it in and go home, like sometimes how I feel like Seoul does, which I feel like kind of separates those two teams in terms of, because I think they are, it is a comparison, right? They both have a ton of talent. They're both kind of up and down all over the place. I feel like Atlanta's a little bit more consistent though than Seoul.
I actually think there is some upset potential here. I absolutely really do. I think that Logix could have like a monster game. I think that Kuz and Numlocked going into this game are going to be hyped as hell. And I think they'll be bringing the energy and like motivate their players. Nevix is honestly, as much as I am Swedish, I think he's the wild card in this match a little bit, because sometimes his Sigma play can be really good and sometimes his ultimates are just like pretty tragic. So Nevix needs a good game, I think.
Didn't he have one this weekend that was just like a total whiff? I remember watching the thing. He's like behind like a telephone.
Yeah, it was just blind.
It was a blind one and he just completely, wasn't even close.
Yeah, I think it was on Ilios, Was it on Well?
Lighthouse.
Yeah, no, it was unwell. No, it was unwell. I remember watching it. He was like on the right side, like when you're not on the lighthouse side, on the one that's kind of like open with the health pack. And he just kind of blindly used it around the corner and nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I think there's serious up to potential here. I'm just warning you guys.
I agree with you. I think you put it pretty well, actually, Matt. I think Atlanta's lows don't look necessarily that bad. And when I watch Atlanta as well, I think there's a team here that when they make mistakes, how do I articulate this? It's a good thing I'm not on a desk anymore. When I look at Atlanta play, it feels like they're only a few short steps away from being a top team, usually most of the time. They make some mistakes, but when they clean them up, I'm pretty confident in their ability to be a top team. Whereas Toronto are a team that feels like they got a bit more further to go beyond that. Like they don't make as many mistakes, but yeah.
Also, you look at Atlanta's record, and they've never lost to a bottom tier team. And in fact, they've never lost a map to a bottom tier team. They always beat the piss out of the bottom tier teams. They 3-0'd Toronto, Boston, Florida, Washington, Houston, Toronto. Every time they play against the like Papega division, they just crush them.
Yeah, so Florida in the Papega division?
I mean, that was when they were
Florida
bad,
at the
right?
beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they just are struggling against those decent
elite teams.
Mm-hmm. Well, not just the elite, because they're also struggling against Gladiators and Valiant. You know,
that's
like
true.
Those aren't elite tier teams, but they seem to beat the piss out of the bottom tier.
All right. Well, next game. I think this is the Valiant one. No, it's not. Okay. Guangzhou versus Hangzhou.
Oh.
A little bit split here. Matt, you've gone with Hangzhou. Why?
Yeah, I think they've had a few weeks now. They'll have Architect in the lineup. I think he's going to make a big difference against... I mean, you could have whether it be like an Ash Tracer with Godsby and Architect. I think that could be a really strong combination. They can play some stuff like the Pharah as well if they want to. I think Hangzhou could look pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
And if it's Dive, because we did see some teams play like Winston and stuff in Asia, like you have Gushui on the Winston, maybe like if they want to play some Genji with Architect on the Genji, like it could be a really interesting series.
It's pretty interesting between these two teams because neither of them have a classic Tracer player.
Yeah,
apart
Nero's
from
Tracer is really
hit
good
scan
though.
Player. What, sorry?
Nero's Tracer is really good.
Nero's Tracer is pretty good, yeah. And that's what I was just thinking. It's probably better than Architect. I don't think I've ever seen Architect play Tracer.
Godsby has played Tracer.
But you would have Godsby on the Ash, wouldn't you?
Architect could probably play the Ash. His Widow's pretty good.
Yeah, because he's played like Widow and stuff in the past, right? Like,
yeah, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't normally play.
But they might not even play that meta, you know?
I feel like neither of these teams will really opt into that meta. Yeah. Like maybe they'll end up playing the Ash May or something like that. Or maybe they'll just end up going for something totally different. This meta doesn't seem to naturally fit these two teams because they have the like Happy who plays the Widowmaker, the kind of stuff, and he plays the Tracer stuff. And then you have Godsby who plays the Widowmaker stuff and the Tracer stuff. And then the other guy's more of a projectile player.
Yeah.
Even though really Nero and Architect, yeah, they are super flexible. I don't know with this one.
Well, you're going to predict one. Yeah. So.
Guang Xiao is the exciting pick.
It is.
But
yeah.
I just had to rely on Guang Xiao.
What are you banking on here? Like, you're banking on the fact that Architect is a significant addition to this team.
Because I think these teams were close even when Adora was playing. Like, Guang Xiao wasn't that far off. I think Guang Xiao was definitely better, but...
Recently, Nero hasn't been playing. He did play in the main melee, right. But before that, he didn't. Like, this Guang Xiao has kind of been a little bit missing with some of their pieces.
I'm going to go with the Guang Xiao charge. The reason being, like, if... I don't think that it's going to come down to some Winston kind of stuff because neither of these teams have mega tracers. And I think that normally you would only play dive if you have like a mega Winston tracer duo. So I think they'll end up playing double shield. And I think Krong's quite a lot better than Rio is. Rhea, sorry.
Yeah.
At double shield. So I like the
Singles. I got the stats lab up right here. And Rhea's Sigma stats are not superb. I will tell you that. You know, I don't know how much weight you want to put into that. I mean, to be fair, Krong's Sigma stats are not fantastic either. I mean, they're kind of middle of the pack. So, you know, if you want to base it from something.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Guang Xiao, but I think this should be a great game. And I'm excited to see what kind of stuff they throw out because I don't really get the vibe of Tracer Ash from these teams.
Yeah.
3-1.
I still, you know, I appreciate the Godspeed and Architect kind of hype.
Oh yeah.
But I really want to see how like they mesh and like the chemistry between them and like how they actually play it off in game. Because in theory, this could be really strong. But I want to see them get to a point where they like showcase it.
It should be, right? Because it's been Godspeed pretty much trying to carry this bloody team.
Yeah.
God knows how long. So Architect coming in should be pretty big. The next match I think is the Valiant one. It is. I am going Valiant for this one. Valiant versus Mayhem.
I think that's an exciting pick.
That's my hot take.
That is a nice pick. That's an exciting one.
But it's hot. It's hot as anything because you got to think if we're going into the Tracer Ash meta, they're going up against Yaki.
Yaki versus Shaq's
gonna
Shaq.
Is Shaq's going to be able to have the same performance?
Ooh.
I don't know why I really went with this. It's a little bit cheeky from me because I think if I was using my brain, Mayhem would be the pick. But something about Pac and Ten and just the presence, you know, that's my coach.
I you know what? I'm super tempted to go with you for the Valiant pick.
Yeah.
I think that this is an amazing meta for the Valiant. And I think that Mayhem kind of picked it up in the main melee and showed everybody that it was really viable and the way to play it properly. But I think that Valiant's players just naturally fit into it so well.
This is going to be a sick fucking series.
This is going to be so good.
But then again, every time we say a series is going to be good, sometimes it's one-sided. Feels like a lot of the time it ends up being one-sided. Series that we expect to be close.
Yeah, sometimes. Does anyone know what the maps are going to be? We have no idea, right?
Well, hold on.
I wonder why they're not published on the website anymore.
Are they not anymore?
No, they're not on the Overwatch League website. I don't know why.
Kind of dumb.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna fuck it. I'm going to go for the Valiant. I'm going to take an absolute punt.
Nobody gives a shit about our predictions anyway.
Yeah, I think that the Valiant have a very good chance of being able to take this. And I think most people view it as an upset, but Shaxx and KSP are both incredible. Some people were really mad that Shaxx didn't get the MVP for their game. They both had, what was it, like KSP had a 3.2 KD and Shaxx had a 3.3 KD. Like they both popped the fuck off.
We can speak on why that was. It's because they prepped the assets in advance and Shaxx wasn't playing map 2. I think. Or was it map 3?
Yeah, it was map 2.
Map 2, Shaxx wasn't playing. So they were asking us, who do we want? And yeah.
Yeah. But I also don't really agree with like the Shaxx carried kind of thing. Like Shaxx was amazing, but you can't carry
your DPS partner who also puts up a 3.2
he's going
KD.
Fucking like, crazy as well.
Like,
yeah.
Fuck off. That's not a carry. Like, he was amazing, but both of the DPS were amazing there. I don't know. Shax was unbelievably good, but KSP was right up there with him.
All right. I think that's the last match. So the second to last segment that we've got. We're bringing it back. It's the power rankings. Yeah. Week 20 power rankings. We haven't done these in a while, I don't think.
Yeah, they're going to be all over the place.
Yeah,
Reddit must need something to talk about.
They're actually not all over the place. I did my power rankings today, and I moved like two teams from the Melee.
Okay.
I moved Soul, and then I moved like Batters. And I was
we didn't do any. Yeah, it's good to have those unofficial power rankings to go off for the official ones.
We didn't make May Melee power rankings. Ours were like a week before the May Melee. So we haven't done them in a long time.
No, it's been a while, and that's what I'm saying. Get Philly down a couple of notches.
Yeah, I mean, look at that. Philly's at number one. So yeah.
Shock, number one. Mayhem, number two. Any arguments?
Any arguments for Mayhem, number two? I mean, me and Matt had a head-to-head about this.
Yeah.
I think with the current meta, you can definitely keep Mayhem at number two.
Yeah.
Philly, I don't think, is worse than third, right?
No.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have the Valiant of fourth.
Valiant over Paris.
Would you have the Gladiators ahead of Atlanta and Dallas?
Yeah. And above Atlanta. Paris as well, I'd say.
Paris are a weird team.
Gladiators are weird too.
Yeah, Gladiators haven't been amazing, but Paris, in their recent matches, have gone to 5 twice against Boston. And I don't think any of us are saying that Boston is a top team. So that's not a great look for Paris. And then they also lost to, was it the Valiant? Right? In the May Melee?
I believe so, yeah.
I got that right?
Did they lose to Paris? No, Paris lost to...
Have I messed that up?
Why do I feel like they lost to somebody?
No, it was Valiant, in the quarterfinals. It was a 3-2 game. It was kind of close, but I think that was before Valiant really got to grips with the current system. So
I would probably put Boston above the Justice.
Yeah, is bottom, I think. I
think they're worse than Vancouver.
Yes, I would agree.
Would you put Toronto above Houston?
In their current state, yes, because they're playing musical chairs with their tanks.
I think Houston had a pretty decent game against Philly. Like
Hydration's Orisa is okay, but his Winston is distressing.
I think they, it just looked like he wasn't comfortable like flexing the heroes as much on the fly and like had a good read on like the strats and stuff. But like there were some good parts about Houston, and that series wasn't like a complete stomp by any means. So, like, I'm a bit hesitant because Toronto, they only beat Vancouver, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm okay either way.
I still think
that we haven't figured out the... I think that Atlanta have to drop underneath Dallas. I think Atlanta
continue to lose.
I mean, who have they beaten? Like, they have only beaten bad teams the entire year.
But the recent losses have been to Shock in Florida, right?
You said this about New York as well, Sideshow. You said this about New York early in the season as well.
But New York didn't have opportunities to compete against middle of the pack teams. Atlanta have had chances against middle of the pack teams. They've had chances against Valiant and against Florida and against Gladiators, and they have failed every single time. I mean, whereas Dallas at least have shown promise recently.
Yeah, I don't feel good about it, but I actually kind of agree with you. And I think about it.
I mean, I'm good either way.
And haven't looked bad meta for Dallas too.
You think it's bad? Yeah,
maybe not bad, but it's not the best. Sorry, I'm not gonna say it's bad, but it's not the best.
I actually do think it's a bad meta for them. Like, I think when I casted their game, they really struggled to make like Ashe Tracer work in any regards because they couldn't figure out who was going to play what. Because when they would put Decay on the Tracer, Doha wouldn't do anything on the Ashe, and then when they defaulted pretty much to Mei Ashe, so they could have Doha play the Mei and then. Decay play the Ashe, but they were never able to really make anything work out of that.
Yeah, I thought they looked best when they played Doha on the Hanzo. I think that Hanzo Tracer is still pretty viable at the moment. If you're playing the double shield war.
I'm pretty map dependent.
I think, now that I think about it more, I think that Paris maybe should still be above the Gladiators. I think it's pretty close between those two teams, but it's only been a couple of matches since the Gladiators lost to Boston. And the Gladiators just came out with a win over Atlanta, sure, but they their recent matches haven't been amazing. They lost to Paris.
They
lost to Paris, then they lost to Boston, and then they won against Washington and Atlanta.
I think you could interchange Gladiators and Paris, and you could probably be quite happy with it. And the same for Dallas and Atlanta, and you could be quite happy with it. I think you can make arguments for either way.
I would almost want to put Boston over Toronto.
I don't think so.
They just won.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Come on, let's go.
Boston beat the Gladiators, and then they've had 2 5 map games against Paris. Like, put some respect on those poor little
bastards. You just did a fucking 10-minute monologue on fucking Numlock's history and how big he was going to be for the team, and he went to fucking Turkey, and then you're going to put him below Boston?
Yeah, I still think so. Like,
I don't know if I feel good about it, though.
Toronto haven't played any other teams close yet, right? Like, it's
What do you mean they have 4 game 5s? We just talked about it.
That's true.
But this is
actually
a prediction of what's going to happen in the future. Like, this is a prediction of what's happening next week and how strong they're going to look. I think they looked pretty strong in this meta. And they're up against Atlanta, who I've got some question marks of. I don't know.
Yeah, go on. That's classic sideshow recency bias. Jonathan was just zooming in on his camera.
What? No!
Yeah.
Yeah, go on. I agree.
Come on!
Okay. What are we thinking about? Does anything change in Asia?
Yes. I think...
I mean, Seoul.
Can
Seoul move to the Chengdu zone? Can we move Seoul to the Chengdu zone?
No. They're above Chengdu, below Chengdu zone.
I think Seoul, given the
they're
week.
They're not in a Chengdu zone.
they kind of are, though. Like, you
they're
can't
just pretty mediocre.
They're not mediocre. They made the finals of the main melee, Johnny. They nearly
swept Shanghai. No, I said Chengdu. Sorry, I didn't mean Seoul.
Oh, right. Chengdu are not in the Chengdu zone. Seoul, I think, are. Like, Seoul have created their own Seoul dynasty.
Seoul take
zone.
The mantle of the Chengdu zone.
No, man, it just feels weird to put them there. But they deserve it, but I think they should just go. I think if they played against London and Chengdu, they would beat them next week.
They would beat both of them, yeah. I think
so. Don't you have to rank them above Hangzhou as well? Because Hangzhou have done nothing recently, and the only reason we're rating them highly is because we rate Architect, and like, we think it's going to be a new page for them, a new move.
Think they did nothing?
Spark's recent results have been really bad.
In the main melee, they were the upper seed. And then they played against Seoul in the second round of the matches, and Seoul were on a tear during the May Melee.
But you look at their actual play, and they were playing that fucking dumb comp that I hate, where it's the Ryan Zarya with the Torb McCree shit without a Lucio, and they just looked like poo-poo. And they did that against New York as well. But yeah, like, for the last 4 weeks... Their only win was over London, and they just looked bad in all of their games. It wasn't even like they were even playing the top teams close.
I
feel like this was a slump for Spark recently.
I will only accept them below Spark.
What?
You have to rank Seoul above Spark.
Josh, he's not listening to you, Josh. You don't want anymore.
My expectations for Spark next week are higher than they are for Seoul.
No, let me talk some sense into you. You have to put more weight into Seoul's melee performance, where they were one map away from winning the finals.
You just have to be lectured by Josh for not considering
into that than a single loss to New York in a hero pool where they're just Papegas. It was one match.
But how many times
can we give them a piece of a hero
pool? They made the finals of the May Melee!
Yeah, but they won multiple maps in a row. Well.
They won 2 matches in a row against their peers, and then they won 3 maps against the best team in the division. And because they lose one match recently, you're like, they're pretty poop.
Yeah.
It's not that Seoul are poo, though. They are wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
And you just can't trust them. But when they're good, they're really good.
I think...
Just put them in the middle, then.
I think with a team like Seoul, you do just ignore the main melee.
What? Yeah. Why? What? Why would you ignore the main melee? Why would
clearly,
you
Because clearly
take
they
the
don't
worst?
Remember it. If they don't remember it, why should I?
But you can't only take the bad. Like they're crazy inconsistent. But you have to take the good as well as the bad.
I think if Seoul played Hangzhou, Hangzhou would win. I have higher expectations for Hangzhou coming into next week than I do Seoul.
If Architect had not joined this team, would you have the same opinion?
Probably not.
No, because Sparker were in a pretty bad slump for the last like 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So basically, our expectations of Spark, I think, are genuine and they're valid, but they are based on the speculation that Architect is going to make a big impact to this team.
Yeah.
It's theoretical.
I won't die on this hill. All I'm saying is, look back at this episode after week 20.
Yeah.
No, but that's not how it works, Brett, because you could be right, and no one of us is denying that Seoul is inconsistent. We all agree that Seoul is inconsistent, but in my opinion, the results from the main melee have more weight behind them, and they're worth more than what Hangzhou has accomplished. So it's not about their future performance as much as it is looking at their past and what they've done the past month. And I think Seoul has accomplished more as a team.
I think, though, if Hangzhou looks really good this week and Seoul continues to struggle, they will pass them.
Well, think about it like this.
They'll go down real quick.
Reframe it a little bit. I think that it's more likely that Hangzhou stay consistent like they have done previously. They've been a pretty consistent team. I don't know if any of you were going to disagree with that.
I mean, up until recently.
They've been a consistent team. I think it's more likely that they stay that consistent than Seoul go on a tear. I think it's more likely that Seoul shit the bed for a second week in a row.
I think when you put it that way, that does make sense, where you are basically saying you think there's a better chance that Hangzhou continues to improve with Architect or at least stay the course, and you think there's a high chance that Seoul Dynasty continues to do this rubber banding throughout the whole year.
Yes.
Okay.
But even if they rubber band, if they rubber band and they're winning tournaments or making it deep, like they're peaking when they need to, you know?
Fucking hell, Josh. I mean, I've been out for dinner with Arnold and I don't even think that. Whatever, dude, whatever. Just take it. Take the power rankings. You can have them.
There it is.
I concede. I concede.
We browbeat
him. We conceded. I concede. We broke Bren.
But there's actually a
worthwhile discussion about power rankings and like what your definition is. But in my book... Got it right,
so that was it. We finalized it.
Yep.
Cha-ching. Cool.
Well, there it is. Last segment of the day.
Here it is.
Because you know Johnny wants to go to bed. That's because he's tired.
Everybody,
no, I wanted to do it's because he's drunk. Dungeons in WoW Classic.
It is time for my player of the week.
Nice.
Is it a French player? We'll find out. Yeah. I don't know if it has audio.
It's my player of the week.
Are these different all the time?
Yes.
Are you deliberately taking the piss out of the French by dressing as a frog?
Oh, my Lord.
My player of the week this week is not Hunter, although some of you wanted it to be. It's not McGravy, although some of you wanted it to be. It's actually going to be Achilleos. So Achilleos got married recently, and he's already in the doghouse, isn't he? He had to delete his tweet. I love this. I love the fact that he's got married. He said that. I think he said in a follow-up tweet that there's no ill meaning behind it. He's just his wife wasn't comfortable with it, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
But I just like the idea that there's a trope that when you get married, the relationship changes in a dynamic where suddenly the wife is wearing the trousers, so to speak. You know, a bit of an outdated expression, if you will. You know, based on the modern era.
It's true.
But when you get married, I mean, Matt can attest, it's suddenly the authority is all being held. So.
You think that Matt ever had authority?
Actually, I know for a fact that Matt's never had authority.
Chelsea knows what's going on. She's actually organized and functional.
Yeah. I am organized and functional.
Are you?
Congrats to the guy who's like, yo, let's do 10 a.m. And then he's like, oh, I can't make it. It's too early.
I frequently organize head-to-heads at 10 a.m., the recording of them, roll out of bed at 10, turn on my PC at 10:15, and then go, why the fuck did I arrange this for the morning? Yeah. And just moan about it.
I start the call, and his eyes are basically closed. He's like, all right, what do you want to talk about? Yeah. Like, Jesus Christ, it looks like you got off a bender.
I'll end the podcast by just saying that the war on the ants is going well.
Okay.
Now, they could have enlisted help from mosquitoes. I got chased by two...
Why did you say mosquitoes so weird?
I don't know. Did I say it weird? Mosquitoes?
You said it weird. Mosquitoes.
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 Mosquito. I also got chased. Today, I was reading outside, and I covered myself up in all long sleeves, and I wore jogging bottoms and everything, because I didn't want to get stung again. I got chased by two hornets outside. I was only outside for 20 minutes. Yeah.
What have you done to insects?
Well, I've gone to war against insects, against the insect kind, I suppose, haven't I? I've just been poisoning the ants. It's been going well. I've seen them regress at the backside on the northern front of the house, of the northern frontier, but the southern frontier, there's still some work to be done. We've still got a bit of work to do. I got poison on the way, but I will be conducting a nice little pushback offensive in approximately 24 hours.
Nice.
You should film it like the Battle of Winterfell with cutscenes to different sides of your house of where you're fighting.
I'll make sure the
battles.
Contrast is really low so nobody can actually tell what's going on as well. Yeah, so it can be like the Battle for Winterfell.
And then at the end, you'll come out with a huge just stab to the middle of all of the ants out of nowhere.
Don't know if you know how ants work, Matt.
Nah, I don't.
Do I need to come up with a dumb question for you to end the podcast, Kurt?